This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And we're getting ourselves ready for a celebration weekend. Because hopefully we're going to be celebrating up in the Northwest. There's a football game going on over there. And I'm very much looking forward to this one. Been looking forward to this one all season. We were celebrating last weekend as well. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later when Nottingham Forest came down to New Griffin Park. And to be quite honest with you, there's been celebrations all week. I don't know for what reason. We're just making it up as it goes. But my name's Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint waiting for the long weekend, the second long weekend in a row, to happen so that I can go up north and celebrate with chums just all over the place, including my man Laney, who's in the house. Laney, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, as you say, it's we've had several quite big matches, as the season comes towards the end. Four games to go, and the first one's up at Liverpool, mate, where we're going to get a right royal victory, I hope.
That's right, actually. Hopefully we're going to be kings for the day, yes, as they say. But listen, looking forward to our trip up to Liverpool on all over the weekend. I'm not going to say on Saturday, because I think it's a little bit more than that going on, actually. You know, it could be there for the whole year, yeah, as it goes. But like I said to you, we've got loads going on in this podcast. Like I said to you, me and Laney are going to, well, we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff going on as well. We're obviously going to look back at the Forest match, listen to the fans, what they had to say after the Forest match. JB has got some fabulous facts and funk, actually. JB, I mean, he's really come up with a good one this time as well. JB's talking about all sorts of players who scored 20 plus goals as well, you know, conceding late, you know. JB, love JB's facts and funk, so we got him as well. And also our special guest, the Anfield Rap. As you know, we've got a nice little thing going on with the Anfield Rap. Good set of lads and lasses up there in Liverpool, and they're going to be chatting to us about Liverpool and Liverpool's season, which hasn't quite gone to plan. But anyway, Laney, just talking about things that haven't quite gone to plan, we don't often talk about, well, we do actually quite often talk about other teams in this league, because that's what we do. And there's one team in this league who were, to be fair, they were massive. They were champions of Europe. They actually won the European Championship at one stage. I can't remember exactly when, but apparently we keep being told they won the Champions of Europe. And things aren't going particularly to plan up in that region, are they?
No. It's been an awful season. It's been a brilliant season for us to watch at Elland Road.
Leeds.
Yes. Xavi Garcia's been given his P45. Sam Allardyce is rocked up, and he's got four games to save the mighty Leeds. You know, whether he can do that or not, he's you know, judging by his interview when he took over the job, he's not shy, is he? He's not short of confidence, comparing himself with Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp and Mikel Arteta, saying, you know, no one can outdo him. But you know, the honest truth of the matter is, take the bravado away, he's got four seemingly Not impossible games, but you know, two of them are, I'd say. You know, he's got Man City this weekend, then he's got Newcastle, West Ham, and Tottenham. And he's got to get enough points or more points than the teams around him. It's looking like, you know, Leeds may go to that last game of the season again, having to win. And I'm not sure they've got it in them, but we'll see how it pans out. We're not going to start sort of saying they're down yet, but you know, the wise money is that he's going to fail there, and he's going to do what he did with, you know, West Brom and take them down. He seems to have this kind of legendary status of like he always gets survival. He didn't at West Brom, and you know, the only person that's guaranteed a win is himself, and you know, you can't blame him for going there. But if you listen to his, you know, his interview, he seemed the perfect fit, doesn't he? He's, you know, he's deluded and really arrogant, which is a perfect fit for Leeds.
I mean, he's talking about he's the only one that could win. The rumour is he's been paid what's about $500,000 or $1 million for the four games, and then if they survive, he's going to get $1.5 million or $3 million, depending on the rumours that you believe. But listen, I'd say again, that's fair play, because at the end of the day, is that if somebody wants to make you that type of offer, you'd be stupid not to take it. And for a person like, you know, Large Sam, as they call him, who's out there, he is. He is, you know, listen, he's going to take it, and he's going to, you know, it doesn't really matter what anybody else says. I mean, if your job is a manager and you've been given a job to take a team for games to for them to survive, I'm not being funny, mate. You're on a winner. You're not on a loser. Because at the end of the day, there's obvious belief that they are in trouble. So that's why they've gone to him. So he's got nothing to lose. If they get relegated anyway, he's just like, he'll take the money and he'll move on. So that's fair play to him. But the interesting thing, I think, more than anything else, and we don't want to talk about them not too long, because we obviously want to talk about our game that's coming on, but I just think it's interesting, obviously, and this is because this is the conversation that's been happening quite a lot around all of football, not about us, is obviously Victor Orta, who's their director of football, who everyone thought was an absolute guru, who brought in, you know, Bielsa, and you know, they, you know, some Leeds fans are saying, we've gone from Bielsa to Fat Sam, or Large Sam, sorry, because I'm saying, you know, you mustn't be largest of the people. That was the nickname he was given, so Large Sam, we'll call him. They've gone from Bielsa to Large Sam within a very short space of time. And there's this whole thing about, you know, we talk about football is kind of like, is it about the survival? Is it about what the club's all about? You know, they used to bang on all the time about the type of football that they played. And if anyone played, inverted commas, anti-football, they used to get properly lambasted. But now they're in the situation where, to be quite honest with you, anything goes. And if Large Sam brings anti-football to Leeds, that's fine. But you know, it kind of seems to go against their whole ethos and what they were kind of preaching to the world what Leeds is about. And this is the whole thing that's kind of really confused me, because obviously, you know, Brentford are at fault for last season not putting them out of their misery and sending them down, because maybe if they'd gone down last season, they could have kind of maybe sort of kind of recalibrated themselves under Jesse Marsh and got themselves back up and maybe got themselves in a decent place. But instead, they weren't really in the right place. They saved themselves last season, got themselves into more trouble, sacked a manager who, to be honest, you may not have been as bad as what they all thought, but he just wasn't given the time. And now they've got in Large Sam to get them in the next way. And that's what really confuses me.
Yeah, and you know, and if we're looking at facts as well, they were never champions of Europe. they won the European Fairs Cup a couple of times in the late 60s, early 70s. They did get to the European Cup final, like the Champions Cup final once, but they lost. So you know, that's factually correct, I think. And as I said, we're not going to talk about them sort of, you know, for too much longer. But you know, it just does show you just how some of these clubs, it's just a clown car crash, isn't it? Once you know, they talk about 5-year plans, and they talk about sustainability, and they talk about, you know, being really well structured and having a long term vision. But they, you know, you test the model slightly, and it just cracks, and they sack anyone and everyone, and it just shows you it a lot of time it works when it works, but you have to kind of go with the flow, and you have to be true and consistent, learn from mistakes, and it doesn't seem like many clubs actually do. So we're not going to get all preachy, that's not the Brentford way, but there's not a lot of love between Brentford and Leeds, and I hope they go down.
And just finally, if we just go back to the odd shape ball podcast, as we call it, which is that Leeds podcast, and I just remember that episode where they said it was humour, it was a little bit of banter as they go, but everyone that I've played it to, not Leeds fans as well, the borderline between bad banter and arrogance. And they saw another side of it as well. And I think that the line was Brentford don't deserve to. It's almost like they didn't recognise us being in the Premier League. And there's that whole thing, listen, we're used to it, so we don't really care. But it's that, it's almost like the really weird tables turn. This is 18 months later when, they kind of almost laughing at us being in the Premier League. They talked about us having second season syndrome. They're like, okay, they've survived this season, but next season it's going to be all over for them. And it's almost like 18 months later, you look at the situation, you sort of say, listen, careful what you ask for, lads, and karma is an interesting thing, is what I'll say. And listen, they might survive, but they've got bigger fish to fry than to laugh at us, because we're going off on our US tour, which they were actually pulled from, because they thought, actually, hold on a second, Leeds United, we've just found out they're not champions in Europe, and also it looks like they might get relegated, so we don't want them to go to the USA with all these smaller clubs, because they're probably too big for this lot. So what we'll do is that we'll just let them sit wherever they are. So anyway, I shall move on from that, because talking about, you were talking about Champions of Europe there. We were talking about things that, just kind of going against the grain. That's something that might make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, and you have to sort of debunk, right, these theories sometimes, lady. And on Saturday, when Brentford started the match last week, and they were kicking towards the West Stand in the first half, how did you feel about that?
I don't, obviously it's like a traditional thing now, isn't it, that we shoot towards the West End in the second half, in the same way as we like to shoot towards the Ealing Road end at Griffin Park in the second half. So yeah, I mean, Notts Forest won the toss, and they flipped it around. I mean, I think that I think that's part of the kind of slightly disruption. It's their shout. Maybe they wanted a kick towards their own fans, to start with, to give them some sort of advantage, But yeah, I'm not worried one way or the other, if I'm honest with you, Bill. I don't think it makes an awful lot of difference. I know it doesn't happen often, but I don't think it's a jinx.
It does. I get quite disconcerted actually when I see us kicking the wrong way in that first half. And you're always looking for an excuse as a football fan to find out an excuse as to why we may lose. And the very few times that we've kicked that way, I've turned around to people around me. They said, "Oh my God, it's because we're kicking in this half," and you're using that as an excuse, and it kind of just twists your mind as such. But like I said to you, JB's going to talk about this a little bit later. But he's actually said, to be fair, when we're kicking in the wrong way in the first half, it very rarely goes against us. In fact, it's nearly always gone against us. So like I said to you, it's debunking those theories. I was just going to say to you, Blaney, just having a little bit of fun here as well before we go into the main depth of the podcast and talking about stuff. I mean, any other theories out there that we should think about sort of debunking? I mean, obviously there's one theory that we've massively debunked this season, is second season syndrome, which I've always had a massive thing about, and I think is absolute nonsense. And it's something that pundits out there talk about to try and make out they know what they're talking about, where half the time they don't know what they're talking about. Or second season syndrome, what does that mean? It doesn't really mean anything other than you're being very lazy because a team has come up, and because they didn't go up the first year, didn't go down and get relegated the first year from the Championship, they'll get relegated the second season. But it doesn't mean that you're actually looking at what's going on in and around that club. So many lazy people use that for us this season, that we're going to get bitten by second season syndrome, and that has been fully debunked, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Yeah. And I noticed there's a few of those people that were saying about second season syndrome are going, oh, well, it's third season syndrome. And it'll just be continued. You know, we're always going to be stacked. You know, the odds are going to be stacked against us, you know, always. Not always, but, you know, in the first 4 or 5 years until you can get, you know, your bank balances up to be able to meet some of the big boys. And, you know, you look at the numbers, you know, three seasons of 150 million quid is, you know, 450 mil, it's best part of £500 million that are going to be coming in to our coffers, plus whatever our players are worth. Obviously we need to start spending some money on increasing the caliber of the squad as time goes on, and, you know, assuming we do survive for, you know, the foreseeable future. But, you know, it's hard to go wrong when you've got a really excellent coach, a really good football philosophy, C, great director of football, and you've got this kind of backing by the owner, and, you know, this amount of money. So every year we survive, I think our chances of surviving increase. And yeah, you're always going to be threatened by relegation, but it's only if you play awfully, and we don't do that either. So, you know, again, taking nothing for granted, but we have certainly debunked that second season syndrome. I've got another one here for you, Billy. Too big to go down is another one that you hear that a lot, and the other one is cheats never prosper. I don't know if you've heard that one before.
I have heard that one, actually, and I think that going on this season, maybe that one's going to be fully debunked, actually. But the too big to go down, I mean, we see that quite a lot, obviously, because being in the second and the third tier and even the fourth tier, we've seen a lot of big teams that have come down, and we've seen their attitudes change as they've not been too big enough to go back up again. So they've sat in those leagues for 10, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 14 years, and they've managed to sort of calm themselves down. You know, even Aston Villa, when they came down to the Championship, oh my God, when they first came down, oh my God, they presumed they were going to go straight back up. But after, what's it, quite a few seasons in the Championship, they calmed themselves down. It was interesting to see Leeds down in the third tier as well. That was quite interesting and quite sort of kind of sobering for them as well, because they just realised that they were nowhere near the Champions of Europe stage at all, so they had to calm themselves down as well. So yeah, too big to go down is obviously one of those things that are being debunked as well. Second, new manager bounce as well is one I've always hated, because it's a new manager bounce. It's just, you presume you get a new manager, everyone gets scared when the new manager comes in. But like I said to you, the stats are the people who put money on this say, actually, if a new manager comes in over the space of, you know, 100 games, something like that, you're more likely to lose than you are to win. So that's quite interesting. That's a load of nonsense as well. What else? Have any others, lady? You got any others?
No, the cheats never prosper. I think that was one I thought was quite poignant for last weekend.
So there's more chance of winning if your team likes to play football. Do you think that's true, Lainey?
Yeah, it's the whole XG. I mean, you know, we say, I think we ought to stop saying it, you know, either you like or you don't like, you know, XG. And I think it's a measure of quality chances. But by playing good football, you normally can create good chances. So I think the two kind of go hand in hand. So
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, okay, first of all, what's the question? What is the definition of likes to play football or good football? You know, at the end of the day, if you're playing the ball long, that's defined. I mean, you can see all the people, some people are already saying to us, oh my God, they're a long ball team, they're Stoke City. But playing the ball long, if you're doing it right, is that good football? I mean, surely, you know, you can still create good chances as long as you do it in the right way. So is there a bit of a snobbery about kind of basically, you know, teams that play sort of kind of 9,245 passes a game? Is that, you know what I'm saying? Because I think this is what this is more about.
Oh, well, 100%. And you look at like Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, he is Mr. Long Ball Merchant. You know, he can pick, you know, they're beautiful, but they're long balls. And, you know, you look at how many, Haaland has scored this year from like his first touch from long through balls. You know, going direct doesn't mean you're playing 1980s Wimbledon kind of bully boy tactics where, you know, you're basically fighting as well. You know, going long, it takes like some real vision. You know, Kevin De Bruyne, he plays long passes all the time. You know, it's you need to be able to play to your strengths. And you've got someone like Ivan Toney, or you've got someone like Haaland, or you've got someone like Mo Salah. Or, you know, you are going to play long balls to them. play to their strengths. And I agree, you know, I haven't got a problem with Brentford mixing it up. You know, I think, you know, when we were in the Championship, we were able to kind of dictate play and play tiki-taka football because of the calibre we were up against wasn't as strong. You know, that it was you know, beautiful on the eye, but I'm not enjoying watching my team any less because we've changed slightly. We might have to change again if Ivan goes, Will, but I'm enjoying what I see.
Yeah, and I'm just going to also ask you a question. Is there a good time to score? Because people sort of say this is a good time to score in a game. And that is a theory. You know, they'll look at the clock and say, that's a good time to score. But I'm not being surely any time is a good time to score, surely.
It just depends, doesn't it? You know, last minute plus, you know, five, injury time plus six was a great time to score. It was the best time to score last weekend because it means there was no time for anyone to come back. But it depends. I think there is good and bad times to score depending on who you're playing, to be honest with you. I think we score first in the first minute against Man City and that's the only goal we get, then God help us. If we score in the last minute against Man City and that's the only goal of the game, then that's brilliant. It just depends who you're playing, Bill.
I mean, for me, I'd score any minute of the day. You know what I'm saying? Any time's a good time to score for me. And also, I'm just going to do another lady. I'm just wondering, because if a player has got a cultured left foot, is that a particular type of left foot? You know what I'm saying?
We've seen players that have better and worse left foots, I think. I'm not equipped to answer that one so much.
But, I know, it's just, I'm just, is there a cultured and an uncultured left foot? And also, is there a cultured right foot as well? You know what I'm saying? And I'm just wondering, all the theories out there as well. And just the last one I'm going to ask you, Zlaney, is, and you hear it quite a lot as well, because of course, this theory is a very important theory. It's a good squad on paper. Okay, is there a difference between the squad on paper and the squad that actually is on the pitch?
Well, Leeds is a good squad on paper. Yeah, they're just shit on grass.
There we go. But listen, all right. So we've been out to try and debunk all these theories that are going on out there, as they say. Listen, it's just for a little bit of a laugh because we're going to actually come back and cast our mind back to last weekend when Nottingham Forest came down to New Griffin Park. They needed the points badly. They came down to the match. They were ahead for most of the game, but then all of a sudden, bing, bang, bosh, we popped a couple of goals in. Forest got no points. We got the 3 points, and there was a lot of unhappiness in the away end. We're going to come back after a little drink, and we're going to talk about that Forest game. So that Forest game, and just want to mention as well, was Steve, the Baltimore B. That was his final game. He really enjoyed himself, and he's gone back off to Baltimore. We'll be seeing him in a couple of months' time. And just to let you know, me and Lainey were chatting after that game. We thought, tell you what, should we do a little event in Atlanta? So we're going to investigate whether or not we should do a little event in Atlanta before the Brentford game at some stage, either on the day of the game or maybe the night before. We should do like a little besotted event. We'll invite you all down and we'll have a little laugh. We've got to try and find a bar or something like that. I know that they're investigating boats up in Philly. I'm not going to be up in Philly. Lainey might or might not be doing the boat down Philly, but I'm going to be trying to check out a bar in Atlanta and see if we can have a little get together for that one, which is all good. But like I said, you're coming back to the Forest match, the Forest game. Tell you what, I'm not actually going to say anything about this Forest game because I'm just going to leave it to the fans, because the fans, both the Brentford fans and the Forest fans, had loads to say after the game. Let's have a little listen to them, then we can come back and we can remark on their words, what they said before, or not before, after that Forest match.
I love it when we score in cheaty time. They waste time. Sat back and there was 7 extra minutes to play with at the end.
There we go.
We didn't really fire today. Go. It was a bit of a nasty, niggly match, really, where, you know, fair play to Forest, they broke away and they defended and they're desperate. But ultimately, class, luck and cheesy time sorted us right out, and I'm very, very happy with those 3 points.
It's really given me so much enjoyment. Reason's on fire. Your defence is terrified. Let's go on and finish the season on the home.
La 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 la. There we go again. We got the points from the cheats. I think I've got a new word. Schadenfreude.
The time wasting in the Steve Cooper standard style was unbelievable today. Expected, but unbelievable.
put a match to come back. Take a sad song and make it better, Josh. He put the ball in the net. He attacked. That's what we needed at that moment. Him and Ivan both. Ivan only had a few touches, but he made it count. What a match. What a day.
But we played a better standard of football, and that's apparent. It's been that way all through the season, and it showed out in the end. That's it. Great win for the Bees.
First half, we looked really good. Conceded a sucker punch. Second half, changed the team all over the place. Changed the midfield. Changed structures. And I just didn't know where it was. Didn't know where it was coming from.
We didn't play that well, but what a comeback, what a win. And they deserve it for their time wasting, everything about.
Well done, because they fought to the end and they got their reward. And I thought, couldn't see us getting anything out of it at one point, but bloody hell, hats off, brilliant job. They got their just desserts, and I hope they go down.
Ooh! Just overcome by it all, you know? It's an amazing comeback against a very, very mediocre team. And let's hope they go down.
UBs.
We can say the two mistakes from the goalkeeper. Navas cost us. I'm gutted. That game we should have won. But you've got to give credit to Brentford. The fight to the end. That we should have won. I'm gutted.
We just aren't good enough away from home, Billy. We find ways to lose when we're in good positions. I mean, today, I'm heartbroken at the moment, Billy Wright, because I love my club dearly. And I want my club to be like Brentford, safe and consolidated in this division, like Brighton and Hove Albion, like Aston Villa, like Fulham. You can look at luck and you can look at Danilo's injury and like Cooper's made his substitution. That's all hindsight. But in the end of the day, the cold, hard, ruthless analysis says, in this division, which is so unforgiving, when you've got a game by the nuts, Billy, you have to finish it off and take your chances and get out of Dodge with a 1-0 would have been amazing for us. Respect to Brentford, great club, brilliantly run, fantastic in terms of what a stadium this is, right? Great picking players. Just hope we can end up being like Brentford. That would be brilliant. As it is, we go away, we lick our wounds, get ready for Southampton a week on Monday, put this behind us, because that's all you can do. And we start again, mate.
The first 70 minutes were pretty frustrating, and then we kind of got our act together a little bit and made it happen, and glad we did in the end. It was nice to hear freed from desire after quite a long time at the G-Tech.
I mean, a stupid free kick to give away, and then the guy who gives it away jumps out the wall, and then God knows what happens with the keeper, and then you just knew as soon as the fourth official put 7 minutes up, I thought, oh no. I was so shocked when we scored, because we're always backs against the wall in the 40, like end of the first half, end of the second half. It's always a stressful struggle for us to score. We couldn't believe it. And then, I don't know, just that to happen. A game where we never really expected to win, but the way it went, I'd rather it have been 2-1 after 30 minutes and the game peters out. And I felt so much better to be so close, and like to see that we're obviously going to be in the relegation zone, and then we don't play Southampton until Monday night. It's tough. I mean, Southampton is win at all costs now for us. I'm gutted. I'm so gutted. You've caught me I don't know. It's just gutted.
And Nottingham Forest are a shameful team to play. And I'm so pleased that I was on the opposite side seeing Steve Cooper, that ugly mug. I didn't miss that for 1 minute. And I'm so pleased that we beat him today.
So there you hear the fans after that match. I'm just going to go through what that match was all about, okay? So Brentford, as a team, we were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities through individual skill and also goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces. Nottingham Forest, they stole the ball from us often and they created goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces. Brentford, we had no significant weaknesses, whereas Forest lost possession often. We played with width, had large quantity of possession in the other half. We attacked down the right, we dominated possession, and we favoured crossing the ball. Whereas Forest, they favoured long shots, attacked down the left, attacked through the middle, and favoured long balls. You know, we had 14 attempts to Nottingham Forest 5. Okay, 7 in open play, and they had 2. You know what I'm saying? The top people, Josh De Silva with 8, then Ivan Toney with 7.4, and then Musa was 7.4, Danilo 7.2, and then Ethan Pennett was 7, according to whoscored.com.
Sportfan.com. Interestingly, you know, you see the stats and you see kind of what was going on in that game. And even though all the Brentford fans were saying, I mean, and of course, so XG wise, Brentford XG 1.51 to 0.98 for Nottingham Forest. So Brentford fans, you know, they were saying we couldn't see us getting anything out of that game because we were behind for so long. But if you look at see what was actually going on in and around it, it looks like we actually had more of the game in a lot of areas, but we were just behind. Would you agree with that, Lainey?
Yeah, looking at the you know, the details, you know, with knowing that the you know, with the score, it was completely and utterly, you know, justified result. You know, the Brentford got out of the game exactly what they deserved. They created more. They you know, bossed the possession. The passing accuracy was you know, was excellent. You know, the possession, you know, 69% to 31% shots on target, 8-3. You know, we took the game to Forest, and you know, but I just thought it was a thoroughly frustrating afternoon. As to next to you, I was getting wound up. Our passing was, you know, well, not a passing, our crossing, our delivery into the area was predictable. You know, that they know that we're going to pull every single thing back to the penalty spot, and sometimes you just do have to mix it up a little bit. And you know, I know that's what all the best teams do. Man City do exactly the same, and Liverpool do exactly the same. Man United do exactly the same. It is where, you know, it is where the ball should go. Arsenal do exactly the same. You know, look at Odegaard's goals the other night against Chelsea. You know, there's especially the first one. He was just hovering, waiting for the ball to get pulled back. They weren't clinical, and it seemed to be that if we went behind, it was going to be one of them afternoons. We've seen a million of them. You know, anyone that's been watching football for a significant amount of time, or anyone that's been watching Brentford for decades, you know, you get a sniff of it. You kind of know that you're on top, but if you don't take your chances, a team that are desperate, they're gonna, if they do get a goal up, then they're gonna just, you know, just shut up shop, and they're gonna do everything to keep their noses in front. And that's exactly what we saw. You know, we saw the full Steve Cooper repertoire, and his players were doing exactly what we expected them to do. And it was like really encouraging. It was really great to see that not pay off. And you know, that was the thing that kind of sent me home with a smile on my face. Obviously, yeah, seeing us win again, you know, I can't tire of, you know, the free from desire bouncing up and down, but it was just a fact that we got what we deserved. And you know, I think the footballing gods were smiling at us, Bill.
That's right. And Steve Cooper, it's interesting. I mean, you listen to what the fans had to say as well. I mean, you know, we're going back to the theory but debunking now. There's more chance of winning if your team likes to play football. Right. So we're going back to that, actually. So we've debunking of the debunking, like, you know what I'm saying? Because Steve Cooper, I mean, it was like just a tirade of people, of Brentford fans, actually just kind of basically just having a go at Steve Cooper. There's obviously no love lost for the Nottingham Forest manager. I've had a lot of fans that have actually said, look, I've not got any problem with Forest, I just don't like Steve Cooper. You know, now, interestingly, on the flip side of it, you've got the Forest fans who absolutely love Steve Cooper. They believe that he's the only reason why they are where they are, and they love everything about him. When Cooper went to Forest, I told him the reason why we didn't like him. And I remember the reason why we don't like him is, I remember it was specifically, it was one particular game. It wasn't the playoff semi-final. It was a game earlier in that season, which was down at Swansea. I think it was a night game. It was during the pandemic, so we were watching it in the Globe, and I'm pretty sure it's a night game as well. And we played Forest inside and at that, not to Swansea, in that match. And remember, we're all sitting around. We had Pat over there and Club Shop Anne, and you know, Sanjeev is another corner. We're all sitting in our socially distanced tables in the Globe, cheering away as we did with the pandemic. And all I remember is that we were all over Swansea, but they just kept on falling over. They just kept on just falling over at every single opportunity, cheating, and it was just so frustrating.
frustrating because, like, literally they just kept on going down and everyone in the pub was shouting and getting really frustrated and angry about them. And then if I remember rightly, I think we might have gone ahead and we thought, okay, that'll teach you. And then I think they went down for a free kick, which I think possibly shouldn't have been a free kick. And then they scored, the ex-Aston Villa player, I can't remember what his name is, Connor, what's his name? Connor, who went to Barnsley. I think he came to them and he took the free kick and he scored directly from the free kick. And they got a draw, I think, out of it, or they might have even won. And that was really frustrating. And that was the first time I thought, hold on a second, you're a proper cheat. And then after that, we had all the beef between us that went for the following match. And then, you know, we beat them and Ivan Henry got sent off. Rico Henry got sent off and then it got rescinded. And, you know, there was just all sorts of stuff going on. And before you knew it, Swansea fans, it was like the Orient scenario when Orient were just like, we hate Brentford. They're our biggest rivals. We're just like, okay, where did this come from? So there was that situation. It went on the following year. So the Steve Cooper thing is very much a Steve Cooper thing. And as a result of that, a lot of Brentford fans don't want to see any of his teams win. And the type of football that he went into, so some people may argue and say, listen, they're in survival mode. They just need to do anything they can do to get a point. So you've got to kind of let him off a little bit. Yeah, I understand. But the problem with that is that we just associate that with all of his teams that he's ever played. And whenever he's played against us, whenever they've been at the top of the league, they still play that type of negative football.
Yeah, it is really him. I personally haven't got any beef at all with Forrest. And I think that does need clarifying, to be honest with you, because, you know, it can get confusing. You know, it can. We're not disrespecting Forest as a club. It's just that, you know, it's our right to, you know, to not forget about the beef, you know. And it's the same with, you know, Cole Robinson, with Carl with a K. When he made up the accusations of people throwing glasses at him in the forecourt outside, you know, after an MK Dons defeat, and us, you know, some people making mug balloons to let off inside the MK Dons stadium for the return. You know, if someone disrespects our club, then, you know, and they move to another club, sometimes the beef does get transferred, you know. So as I said, you know, it's not really anything to do with Forest. Although, you know, he's clearly got them playing the same way. Whether it's going to be enough to keep them up, I'm not sure. But if it's a choice between Forest going down and Leeds going down, you know where my vote's going to go on that one.
I think there's 98% of the Brentford fan base is the same. And I mean, listen to what the Forest fans are saying. It's interestingly because, you know, listen, we could say what we want because we can do because we're in the elevated position. They're actually saying, oh, it's really peculiar how Brentford fans have got this beef over Leeds and they'd rather, you know, Leeds go down than us. You know, and it's just like, well, kind of, that's just kind of how it goes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You'd probably be in the same position if you were in our shoes, but you're not in our shoes. So at the end of the day, you know, we're sorry we didn't do you a favour last week, but that's because it's a football match. And as I said beforehand, and I said to the Forest fans afterwards on their podcast, I spoke to Mr. Dore, and I said to him, listen, you know, it's up for you. It's the ball's in your court. You can't rely on us and other teams to actually do the job for you. You've got to do the job yourself. So you've got to start winning some matches. And that's the long and the short of it. And they did maybe what we would have done two or three seasons ago. And as a result of that, they may end up going down. We didn't end up going down because it didn't cost us in the end because we did enough last season to stay up. But maybe, as I said to you, just like I was saying with the Leeds thing, some teams have to go down to try and recalibrate themselves so that they can go back up again. And if that's what Forest have to do, I don't want them to go down because I like going to Forest. It's a good laugh and there's a good set of people there. And like I said to you, it looks like it's going to be between Leeds and Forest and maybe or one other team. One of them three teams are going to go down. Obviously, you know, there's a team that I'd rather go down rather than Forest. But anyway, just coming back to that game, I mean, Laney, no sort of kind of danger signs there for you at all?
No, not really at all. No, I think it shows that, you know, you just can't write us off. You know, we had, you know, Chelsea away and Forest and you know, in quick succession. And, you know, we ended up with 6 points. Now, I'm not necessarily sure that, you know, they were two, you know, excellent performances that were, you know, guaranteed wins on any other day. You know, it just shows you that things did go our way against Chelsea, because they were shocking. And then, you know, we were slightly fortunate in the deflections. But what I thought was good was that, you know, we are getting the ball wide, and we are starting to cut in again and get those like big chances. The second goal at Chelsea, where Brian Mbeumo cuts in from the right hand side and finds a finish, and then obviously Josh De Silva does exactly the same in the last knock-ins, cuts in from the right and finds a finish. It helps when, you know, our wide men are contributing, so we're not completely reliant on Ivan Toney. Although, you know, Ivan Toney's finish, it helped that the goalkeeper was crap, and it helped that the defensive wall split. But you've got to give Toney credit and us for pulling the player away from the final man in the wall. He was obviously expecting a runner to go round the right hand side or his left, and it allowed, you know, the ball to get curled round. It wasn't the hardest of shots, but, you know, to Toney, he backs himself, and for that to be 20 goals in a season in the top flight, you know, got to tip your hat, haven't you, Bill?
Yeah, definitely. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because like I said, JB comes onto that. I mean, Nottingham Forest, I mean, Thomas Frank admitted, he said Nottingham Forest did a good job to make it difficult for us. He also sort of emphasised the fact that they scored with their one chance, and then they made it even more difficult for them by, you know, bunkering down and making it difficult for them to score. So, you know, so that was interesting. He admitted the fact that, you know, Forest kind of almost like did a job on us, is what he was saying. But the other thing is that we pointed out, and I think this is the difference between last season and this season. He said that, you know, things weren't going our way. Right. So we weren't getting things our way, you know. Then eventually, you know, we got it with Ivan Toney. He scored a goal, and then we got the final goal. So, you know, you get a bit of a break. And I think this is the things that sometimes when things are going for you, they go for you. And this season, and we're talking about sort of cliches, but, you know, when things are going for you, sometimes then they continue to go for you. And when they're not going for you, they continue not to go for you. And maybe last season when we had that 2 month run where we just didn't win a game, we just had things not going for you. And I don't know whether or not it's psychologically or whether or not it's just a rate. It's a case of, you know, luck and everything kind of that happens in one particular period of time was happening all within the same space rather than evening itself out over a period of time. But we had that last season, whereas this time we seem to be getting a little bit more of the rub of the green, and think some things seem to be going our way, which is all good, you know what I'm saying. So I'm very, very happy with that. Tell you what though, tell you who is really happy with this is JB, because JB has actually got some facts and some funk, and he's going to be coming up with some very, very interesting post-marriage, post-Forest match facts and funk.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Against Nottingham Forest, Josh De Silva's late winner was the 100th goal we've scored in the Premier League. Goals in the latter stages of a game is not too much of a surprise, as 25% of those 100 have been scored after the 80th minute. For the fourth time this season at the G-Tech, Brentford started Saturday's game attacking the West Stand in the first half. Although it doesn't seem to have an adverse effect, as we have not lost any of those games, ending with two wins and two draws. It was the 10th time this season that we'd gone in at the break losing. In 7 of those, that was the final outcome. We're just in 2 where we pulled back a point, Everton at home and Leicester away. Saturday was the first time we ultimately took all 3 points. Apart from Fulham's very late consolation goal, the latest we've conceded this season was in the 96th minute in a game away at Nottingham Forest. That goal cost us 2 points. Ivan scored his 20th league goal of the season, but he was already certain of being our top scorer for the 3rd successive year. Only 7 other players have achieved that in our 96 league seasons. Charlie McDonald 12 years ago, Robbie Cook in the 80s, Steve Phillips in the 70s, Billy Dare in the 50s, and pre-war Dave McCulloch, Jack Holliday, and appropriately on the Besotted podcast, Billy Lane.
So there you go, JB post Forest bats and funk. Try and say that when you've had a couple of wines down you. You know what I'm saying? So, again, late goals, Laney. 25% of our goals have been scored after the 80th minute. We are the never giving up team. No one want to play us, were they?
No, I think we're really fit. I think we have got leaders all over the pitch now, Bill. I think I was chatting to a couple of people this week about Ben Mee. I know he's not sort of captain on the pitch all the time, or you know, but he drives and he keeps players around and focused. He's a winner, and I think that because we've got that kind of leadership at the back, we've got Raya, who's now I'd say edging towards world class, and then you've got Ivan Toney, and then you've got the midfielders. I know we were missing Norgaard on Saturday, and hopefully he would back up at Liverpool. This is just that experience and that confidence. And I was just saying that I don't think this season would have been as good as it is if we hadn't assigned Ben Mee. I think he is such an important player for us. I hope he's around for next season as well. I need to get that clarified. He's been one of the best signings we've ever made, and he plays a part in that those late goals, Bill, because we do keep it tight, and we're able to stretch the game all the way into the final phases, where we're able to soak up pressure. We've got that real solidity to us. We back ourselves to keep a clean sheet in a lot of games that we weren't last year. To go to Stamford Bridge and not concede, even against the current Chelsea team, takes some doing. As I've said, Ben Mee plays a critical part in all the great things that have happened to us this year.
And 100 goals in the Premier League, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
100 goals in the Prem, yeah. It's. I'm looking forward to the 200th. I mean, nothing I see points to us going anywhere for the foreseeable future. And I said, it's not taking anything for granted. That's not. There's no arrogance in that whatsoever, because I'm not a Brentford fan for the glory, But what now it's here, I'm obviously not. Yeah, desperate's not the right word, because there's no reason to be anything other than kind of confident. But I love being in this, league, and us sort of mixing it with the very best and holding our own. It's a sight for sore eyes.
And also Ivan scoring 20 goals, plus as well this season. Again, £5 million. From Peterborough, what would have happened if we'd actually got Ivan Toney this season? We were meant to get him in January with Ollie Watkins in the side. We would have 100% got up that season with Ollie Watkins and Ivan Toney in the team. And God knows what would have happened the following season. It could be pretty amazing. But listen, things happen for a reason. He's now scored 20 plus goals for this season. Of course, it's going to be hard to keep hold of him, no matter what's happening with the whole betting scenario. It is good. But also the other thing is that what I loved is just the hark back, okay, to the players also who scored 20 goals this season, plus goals for this season as well. Obviously, Charlie McDonald, we remember him back in the sort of, he was almost in the early days of the Benham days. When Benham took over, Charlie McDonald was our top striker at the time in the third tier at that time, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, played under Andy Scott, didn't he? And we tried to sign him under Terry Butcher, and Terry Butcher didn't know anything about him when he came for his kind of like in brackets interview, and he didn't come to Brentford that time. But we went back with Andy Scott, and we got our man. And Charlie, he's been back a couple of times. He was back a couple of times last season, I think, wasn't he? And we saw him out on the pitch, and he did play a really good part in that transition. He was a quality striker it sounds like he's a real backhanded compliment. He was a great lower league striker, but I don't mean that in a derogatory way. He was, and there's no harm in that. He got a really good living out of the game, and I know he's coaching now, so yeah, we wish him a lot of luck.
That's right, Charlie. And obviously there's Robbie Cook as well, who I'll never forget scoring that goal, the winner against Bournemouth in the Leyland DAF Southern final down in Bournemouth. We went 2-0 up, Bournemouth came back to 2-2, and then we scored that final goal. We were behind the goal there, we scored the goal, and he came sliding over on his knees, if I remember rightly, to all the Brentford fans that are behind there. And I'd driven in my Volkswagen Beetle all the way from Brighton, where I'd been living with mate Paul Cassell, who went to stay with me that night in Brighton. And I just remember it was just the best night ever. Getting back to your car afterwards, the game was a little bit dicey, as to be said. And then they had a long drive back all the way back to Brighton afterwards, which on the A roads, because they didn't have any motorways that day, it took me about 74 hours to get home, but it was well worth it. But Robbie Cook, what a player he was. And that was a while ago. I mean, we're talking about sort of 85, I think that was, wasn't it?
84, 85 under McClintock, yeah. And I remember Robbie Cook, God rest his soul, he died a couple of years ago, didn't he? Martin Lange bought Robbie Cook. And I remember sitting down with Martin Lange doing an interview for the big Brentford book of the 70s, I think it was. 80s, it would have been the 80s book. And Martin Lange said that to get the money to buy Robbie Cook, he had to sell a Ferrari 350 GTO. Or it was a 250 or a 350 GTO, and he was saying that if he'd kept the car, he said, obviously Robbie Cook was a really good striker, but the car would actually be worth something like 10 million quid now if he'd have kept the car. So he said it was a good bit of business for the club, but an absolutely shocking bit of business for his car collection. First world problems, obviously.
First world problems, definitely. Obviously, there's Steve Phillips as well for the original posse as well. He was the man when I first started supporting Brentford as well. Little Stevie Phillips used to score lots of goals for the Bees as well. There as well, Laney. You remember Steve Phillips, didn't you?
Stevie Phillips was he was in the team when I first started supporting the club. Yeah, famously wore a yellow T-shirt underneath his red and white Buckter Brentford shirt. Stevie Phillips, Andy McCulloch and Barry Tucker and Danny Salmon and Len Bond and, all of those players were just so important. John Fraser, they were just massively part of why I'm still a Brentford fan now. That's the Brentford I fell in love with. And Stevie Phillips, again, another not backhanded compliment, great lower league striker, prolific at Northampton and at Brentford, and he goes Southend as well. But I think, wherever he went, he scored a lot of goals in the third and fourth division. And shame he couldn't have gone up one more time with us.
Yeah, and we're talking about starting at the fourth tier as well. And this is where it really comes from. And I said, we've got a lot of new listeners, but it comes from, listen, we didn't start in the Premier League, mate. We started in that fourth tier. It's called the second division now, but it was called the fourth division there. And we were in the fourth tier, and these players played a massive part to where we are now. And you'll see them. They come down and they're on the pitch the whole time, because we still keep in touch with these players. And they also come down to the Besotted Socials as well, which we will probably have a little chat with you about, because we were talking about this. We need to pull this one together as well, which we've got a few little plans for now that we come out of pandemic zone, and actually venues are actually kind of putting on events and stuff like that as well. But the last one I love as well, Laney, because as you said, he's linked it into Besotted. Billy Lane as well. Billy Lane, the top 20 goal scorer as well. I don't remember him, but I just think he's got a great name, and I think it's definitely Besotted.
Yeah, the lanes. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to say he was a relative, and but he wasn't. But I do know the relatives of Bill Lane do live down Lakewood Road in Brentford still. I went round to their house and to see if they, you know, had any memorabilia and stuff, and they had a few bits and bobs. But yeah, there was Bill and Jack Lane, who were part of that sort of 20s, 30s and early 40s first halcyon days for the club under Harry Curtis. They turned us into, you know, the first wave of top flight Brentford, and that was just an incredible time to be around. And unfortunately, there'll be no one left amongst the fan base now that remembers that. It was just too long ago. But Jack Lane and Bill Lane, yeah, heroes.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they were probably a little bit too old to have played for Brentford in the last time that we actually finished above Chelsea in the Premier League, which was, if I remember rightly, it was, I think it was 38-39 season, actually, was the last time we finished above Chelsea in the Premier League. I'm not sure if there might have been one just after the war, but I think they finished above us just after the war in the sort of 46 season, actually. So 38-39 was the last time we finished above Chelsea in the Premier League. And I'm not trying to count any chickens or whatever you call it anyway like now, but I think this season may be the first time since 39 that we maybe finish at the top of that West London Millie League, as they call it. But anyway, we should move on, because we've got a match on Saturday against Liverpool. We're going up to Liverpool. We're going to have a laugh. It's a 5:30 kickoff, which means it's going to be on TV, which means it's going to be a bit difficult for some people to actually make it up there, but still, there's going to be enough bees up there going to be having some jokes. We're going to go away, have a few little drinks, come back, and we're going to talk about Liverpool. Liverpool. So there's an argument to say that we probably aren't playing Liverpool at the right time. If we'd have played them maybe about a month or so earlier, it might have been a little bit better for us. They're coming off the back of, was it, 5 wins in a row? Saying that, it is their third home game on the trot. They're looking a bit tired. They did beat the F word, Fulham, last night as we speak as well, 1-0, I think, was it with the penalty as well. They've got Champions League doubts unless they continue the run they're at the moment now. They're a little bit jaded, it has to be said. Liverpool, Laney, is this a good time to play them?
Probably, yeah. As you said, they've won 5 on the trot. Those wins, those streaks don't always continue. And three games in a week at home, I remember us doing that a fair bit, and you don't often win the lot. They'll be looking to get revenge over us from the 3-1 win at the G-Tech earlier in the season, a night never to forget. And they stand every chance of doing that. However, I say, the sequence probably will come to an end for them, whether it's a point, we get a point there, or we win. And they'll be aware that we've won the last two, and the game we lost against Newcastle, we deserve to get something out of, and the game that we drew against Villa, we deserve to win. So there's things that could have been better, and we probably deserved a little bit more out of those last few games than we got, and maybe they got a little bit more than they deserved, because to be fair to Tottenham, although they went 3-0 up, Spurs came back and they created enough about them to have probably could have won that game. Actually, they hit the bar a couple of times and missed a couple of sitters, and then against Fulham, it was there was a couple of fluffs there by the Fulham players. It could have been a draw there another time. So, they have ridden their luck at times, but we have seen that they're blessed with an incredible amount of talent, and you play them on the wrong day and you end up like Man United did, losing 7. They're capable of doing that to you as well. So we have to hope they're just a little bit jaded. They take us a little bit for granted, and we were able to take the chances that come our way. We actually need to turn up. We didn't do that last year, I don't think. I think it was one of them near games for us. I think it was a lot of effort to get up there, and it was just a really, really sort of flat afternoon. So, yeah, hopefully turn up and we can start looking at these last four games and ending the season on a proper high.
Proper high. So listen, I mean, we're going to go over to our chums. We've got some chums. There's Liverpool chums. We've got, you know, Spirit of Shankly chums. We've got, you know, Anfield Rep chums. We've got all sorts of Liverpool chums all over the place. And we've got John from the Anfield Rep. I basically go on the Anfield Rep probably once every two or three weeks, actually, and have a good old chat about Brentford, just about Brentford. They want to know about us. And, you know, like literally like once every two or three weeks, maybe once a month, I go on the Anfield Rep. And every now and again, we like to get the Anfield Rep on our podcast. They've been on every single one of our Liverpool Brentford podcasts. And here we go again. We've got John, who knows absolutely everything about Liverpool. I'm having a little chin wag with him to find out what's been going down at Anfield. So big game on Saturday. Brentford's chance to get 6 points off the mighty, mighty Reds, the Liverpool. I mean, I never thought I'm going to say something like that. This is actually blowing my mind. But listen, this is all good, man. As you know, we have got some good chums, some good buddies up in the northwest of the country. And up in Liverpool, we've got the Anfield Rap. We've got John from the Anfield Rap on the Everline here, just giving us a little bit of a vibes. John, how are you doing?
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
That's all good, man. And you're saying, are you looking forward to your celebration bank holiday weekend, which is very different up there because it's all about some sort of European, not European tour, but European vision, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got Eurovision fever massively here. Obviously, Liverpool is hosting Eurovision next weekend, not this weekend, but the festivities have started already. There's a Eurovision village, which is being built as we speak, right by our office. We're lucky enough to have a space in a studio right on the pierhead on Liverpool's famous, next to Liverpool's famous Three Graces down here in beautiful Liverpool. And yeah, they're building a Eurovision village there. There's lots of people coming into the city already to enjoy it. And so, yeah, that is taking over the city. I'm delighted. We love to throw a party here in Liverpool. And this is going to be, longer than a week and fantastic for the city. Great to show it off sort of all around Europe. And yeah, everyone's really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, mate. I'm going to have to get my Eurovision gear on and just come down to your little village down and hang out with you. But anyway, just going back to the football. I mean, Liverpool have had a probably best to describe, and I'm saying it in the most respectful way here as well, probably not the best season. I mean, just give us a quick summary of your season, John.
Yeah, no, that's been more than generous, really. We started flat and we were like, well, maybe that's kind of understandable after the season before. It took a lot out of us, you know, physically, mentally, and so. But we kept thinking, oh, I'm sure we'll get going soon. And then it was, well, I'm sure we'll get going after the World Cup. And then it never really did. Now they've strung a few wins together. It's five wins in a row currently for Liverpool. You know, played spectacularly well, if I'm honest, but at least, you know, do what needs to be done to sort of get over the line in each game. But unfortunately for Liverpool, in terms of our targets, you know, Champions League qualification, it might be too little too late, but all they can do is keep going. But, you know, after the highs of not just last season, but, you know, the Jurgen Klopp era, which has been lots of finals, lots of trophies, lots of, you know, magic nights, you know, this season has been, you know, a little bit damp, a little bit flat, and a little bit of a, you know, reality, back to reality, unfortunately. But still been some, you know, crazy days thrown in. We beat Manchester United 7-0 at home, you know, things like that. So there's still been, you know, some really good performances, but just not as many as what we've been spoiled with over the last 5 years.
And you talked about Klopp. I mean, he's obviously once revered. I mean, he's the man that's brought you, you know, so much joy. You watched some great football with him. He's a right character as well. This season hasn't gone well for, there must be various reasons. I mean, what's the feeling with him? Has it changed? Has it shifted?
It's not really shifted, no. I think there was a feeling that last summer there was maybe a little bit more that needed to be done on the squad that he maybe realised. And so I think one criticism of Klopp amongst some Liverpool supporters is that maybe he's a little bit too loyal to the players who've, you know, who have served him so well. And listen, so many of these players have been brilliant, but, you know, there's a few of them who are getting on a bit now and he's still sort of picking them more often than not. There's a few others who, you know, even the ones who are leaving, you know, he tried to sort of, you know, get on longer contracts and things like that. So I think, you know, if you were to have a criticism of Jurgen, you know, is that maybe he's a little bit, you know, too loyal and you know, not quite ruthless enough, you know, to say, this player has been brilliant for us, has been brilliant for Liverpool, but now we need some younger legs. But So I think maybe there were some mistakes made there last summer, but we all know he's the man to move us forward. You know, we'll all think we know better than the manager sometimes, don't we, as supporters, even if they are Jurgen Klopp. But I think, you know, it is a big summer for Liverpool. I'm expecting, you know, quite a few out and quite a few in, because you need a lot of energy to play in this Liverpool team. And it's a bit of a young man's game, I think, certainly playing in midfield. And so I think with the right reinforcements this summer and a bit of a refresh, I'm sure we can be back firing under all cylinders under Jurgen Klopp next year.
That's right. Okay. So, I mean, listen, I mean, and again, not being disrespectful, but I'd say Liverpool are a million miles away from Champions League football. Saying that, if you win in the next five games, if you win every game as well, then it might be different, but you're quite away from Champions League football. How's that going to affect you next season? Because again, this is something that we've got no idea about. It's a million miles away for Brentford, but we know that teams are kind of gauge their season on whether or not they make Champions League football or not, because it'll affect the players they can bring in and so on and so forth. So how will it affect you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Billy, and we'll have to sort of wait and see. You know, I think financially, you know, it is a bit of a hit, and our owners are quite prudent. They're not ones to, you know, like down the road from you guys, to just throw £300-400 million in a transfer window and hope for the best. You know, they are, you know, they're investment bankers at the end of the day. That's how they've made their money, and so they're very careful sometimes, you know, for our liking, a little bit too careful. I know the managers maybe mentioned a couple of times as well, he'd like them to take, you know, a few more risks, but that's not how they've done things. And to be fair, you know, we have had a lot of success under them. But so the worry is that maybe if we don't get Champions League football this summer, then is the money there, you know, are they going to make the money available for that rebuild I mentioned before? I still think Liverpool is a big enough club and has had enough recent success to attract, you know, the very top players. You know, I don't think 1 year out of the Champions League necessarily affects that. I think obviously if it becomes then two or three, then players start to think, well, you know, am I better off, you know, somewhere else? But I don't think necessarily. I think you can normally persuade, you know, most players that it's, you know, this is just a blip and we want to be back in it next year and look at our pedigree. So I think it's more the financial stuff than attracting the level of footballers at the moment. But we'll wait and see in the summer. Hopefully, you know, the owners as well recognise that you know, a bit of surgery is needed in the summer, and they back the managers to do that.
Right. I mean, I was just talking about, just flipping it as well, talking about the summer. Brentford off to USA in the summer. Very excited about that, playing Fulham, playing Villa, playing somebody else. I don't even remember. It's not about the sides. It's where we're going to Atlanta, going to Philly. We're going to, you know, we're going to Washington. And there's a lot of excitement because we picked up a lot of USA-based Brentford fans as well. And we actually picked them up when they all watched the very first game of the season against Arsenal. And the atmosphere and everything like that just hooked them in. So all of a sudden, we've got all these new fans. Thanks for listening, everybody out there as well. Hopefully, I'll see you out there in America. But this is something that, you know, all of a sudden, we've opened up to a new market out there, up to new people. But this is something that Liverpool have been doing for years. Just talk to me just briefly about the globalisation of football. Is it something good or is it something bad? Because there's good elements, but also bad elements about it, aren't there?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Billy, and we've obviously experienced that a lot with Liverpool, in that, you know, some of our biggest moments, you know, things like Istanbul in 2005, you know, Barcelona just a few years ago, you know, those images go all around the world, and the pictures of the travelling support and on the home nights like Barcelona, the Kop, and people see that and think, you know, well, we want to be involved in that, you know, and so they, and the club, you know, Liverpool, well, all clubs, but Liverpool very much so do it, you know, will try and push themselves, you know, to a global audience and want to attract that. But there is positives and negatives to it. Like you say, like it's extra demand on tickets, and Anfield is only so big, and there's lots of people, you know, in this city or outside the city who want to go and, you know, buy a membership to buy tickets and then are unable to do so and get sort of frustrated. I know for me, you know, I've got two young kids now who are a little bit too young to go to the game, but in a few years will want to. And it's like, well, I've got my season ticket, but, you know, trying to take them sort of along with me is going to be, you know, difficult, and it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. And so I think for young kids, you know, growing up in the city, their access to the game gets a bit more restricted. They're trying their best. The Brentford fans who are travelling this weekend will notice at your end, the Anfield Road end is currently being redeveloped. So they are trying to put tickets on and make extra tickets available for people. But also, the more you know, the more the team does well, and the more you increase demand, you know, that those extra tickets are just a sort of a drop in the ocean. So there's that aspect, really. And also, I think something that I've noticed as well is that generally speaking, it's not obviously the case for everyone, but you know, if people come on board for a result like Liverpool 4, Barcelona 0, you know, sometimes that becomes the expectation a little bit, really. And when we have a bad year like we have this one, listen, everyone's frustrated. You know, someone who supported Liverpool for 50, 60 years is frustrated with this year. But I think sometimes, you know, if you've come up on board a little bit more recently when everything's been wonderful and all the garden's been rosy, then you have a bad year. I think there can be that, you know, struggle to adjust to that, I think, sometimes. And you'll see, you know, a bit more, you know, social media backlash and the players getting it in their neck and stuff like that. And I know for the players, you know, online and on social, you know, it's becoming, you know, more and more toxic. And that's the case for all clubs, really. And I think, you know, that's sometimes, you know, not always, but sometimes could be the case, you know, the product of kind of people coming on board more recently and expecting things to always be wonderful. And so, you know, there are the downsides, but generally speaking, you know, I love that our league's so popular. I love that Liverpool Football Club is so popular. I think it's the best club to support in the world. So when other people sort of come on board and want to be part of that, that feels great. We love showing off our city. You know, we love having people come here and tourists come here and spend their money and enjoying it and going back around the world and becoming, you know, evangelical, if you like, about sort of where we live. We love all that as well. So there is two sides to the coin, and you just need to balance it best.
Definitely. I'm just going to ask you a quick question. I'm saying this again respectfully, but I'm just going to make a point, because obviously you've heard the song as well, because you were talking about, you know, getting the new fans in. I mean, so when fans sing that, the away fans, like, you're just a club full of tourists as well, because you've got one section there which is full of maybe people that aren't, because I know you're a hardcore fan. I know loads of Liverpool hardcore fans going for years, but obviously you've got a section who may come in weekly, buy their tickets, you know, sort of kind of tourist people who come in, play over the odds, and maybe not create the same atmosphere as you would do. Does that hurt you?
I think I would encourage everyone who sort of comes to the game to make as much noise as possible. And, you know, a lot's made out of, you know, people sort of coming in and you know, and doing the, you know, as you say, paying over the odds and just coming for the spectacle, really, rather than to be part of it. And you'd encourage anyone, you know, once, I think personally, I don't know you agree, Billy, once you step into the stadium, you're part of that game, and it's your job to do everything that you can to make your team win. And it would encourage everyone, no matter how many times they've been. And sometimes it's a problem with people, you know, in Liverpool, who've had the season tickets for almost too long, and they just sort of sit there and it's like, all right, sort of entertain. I've seen all the best players in the world, you know. Yeah, I want you to sort of entertain me. So, you know, you want everyone to remember that you are there, you know, not just as a spectator, but a participant in football. And that's when Anfield at its best, and that's when all stadiums are its best. But listen, we can take a few jibes, you know what I mean? That's what football's about a little bit, isn't it? You know, we're not trying to all sanitise it too much. And so if we get a bit of stick from Brentford for being a tourist club on Saturday, then listen, we're all thick skin. We've all been worse football grounds than that.
That's right. So listen, I mean, talking about Brentford earlier this season, there was a famous victory for the Bees. Brentford beating Liverpool 3-1. Atmosphere was amazing. The game was amazing. I mean, for us, that is. And again, I'm not saying that. I mean, a lot of your guys came down to the Globe, as we do beforehand. Loads of Liverpool fans came down. We had a good drink beforehand, after the game as well. We had a good drink afterwards. You shook hands. We had a beer. We talked about football. That's what we do. But, you know, in between, for us, for the first time in ages, it was a victory for us. You know, I was there in 89 when you beat us 4-0 in the FA Cup quarterfinal. I was there in 83 when you beat us, was it 4-1 in the League Cup, the Milk Cup or whatever it's called then as well. I was there all those times, and you had the pain, but Liverpool were a massive club then. We were a tiny little club. So for us to get that victory for me on that day was truly, truly amazing. And it was a great game. Did you see that coming though at the time?
Yeah, I think so, because I think we were struggling. You know, I mentioned before about, you know, how poorly we started the season and how, you know, it took us such a long time to sort of get going. And so I was worried about that Brentford game, because I think one of your manager's real strengths is that he looks at the opposition and he thinks, how can we get out them? How can we exploit, you know, what they struggle at? Because every team, you know, no team's perfect, you know, not even the, you know, the teams at the very top, you know, there's always, you know, something there's always a gap somewhere and there's always a way to exploit it. And I think what the reason you've had so many successes against, you know, the very best teams in this league, and you've beaten, I think, almost everyone now, if not sort of everyone, is that, you know, the manager's able to look at it almost coldly, really, and rather than panic or think, oh, we'll play Liverpool this weekend, let's just, you know, damage limitation. I think he does always look for ways to, no, well, let's have a little look at them and how can we sort of, you know, exploit their issues. And so we did have plenty of issues at that time and still a few, you know, we're not out the woods, certainly. And I think he is someone who will look at that. So I was worried about that game going into it. I didn't think we'd be quite as poor as we were, I'll be honest with you. I thought we'd be a bit better at dealing with it, but I certainly wasn't shocked, you know, by the result, because as I say, you've got plenty of those results at Anfield, at your place now over the last couple of years. So I think if anyone goes to Brentford and underestimates them, I think you're in for a bit of a shock.
Yeah, and I've talked about that, you know, the 83 League Cup game down at our place, you know, where there was officially 17,000, but I know for a fact there's about 25,000 because everyone snuck in wherever they can get into. 89 FA Cup quarterfinal where we played you as well. You know, these are games that we played you in the past, you know what I'm saying? You know, you would say since them times the tables have turned slightly, as in the fact that we have become a much more established side, we've become a Premier League side, and a side that, you know, finally, people turn around and have actually taken us seriously. We've been waiting for that for 40 plus years. I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on Brentford, and who are you fearful of?
I think first of all, you know, it is great that a club can come up, you know, almost from nowhere and be so well established. I think, you know, the way the Brentford operates, you know, as a football club is fantastic. There's a lot to be admired. You know, I love the fact that you've got, you know, bigger, but you've kept your core and you've kept, you know, your soul and what you're about. And that's actually quite a difficult thing to do, and a lot of clubs lose it. You know, they'll build a new stadium sort of miles out the city and then wonder why the atmosphere changes or treat fans badly and then wonder why you don't get a lot back. So I think there's a lot of cares gone into Brentford in terms of, you know, how you've grown. I think it's been, you know, very organic, but also sort of very quick. And you know, you seem to be having the time of your lives. That's what I always feel like whenever there's only so many clubs, you know, in this league where I watch it, and you know, you think, oh, they look like they're having a great time there. And I think Brentford's one of them. Your determination to enjoy it, you know, and remembering that, like you say, really, you know, you talked about, you know, Gates before, remembering where you come from, you know, always sort of helps with that, really. And so there's a lot to be admired, you know, about sort of Brentford and what they do, and then also on the pitch as well. And I think, you know, the main concerns, you know, is the guys up front, and whoever he picks up there, you know, seems to cause problems. There's obviously, even Tony is the obvious one. There's the rumours he's a Liverpool fan, but I mean, he certainly seems to let up when he plays against us. But maybe it's sort of quite the opposite. Maybe he feels like he's got something to prove, I don't know. But he plays very well against us. But listen, he plays very well against most teams, doesn't he? He's a top player, and I know how proud you guys, you know, are of him when, you know, get picked for England and stuff like that, but he deserves it. But also, you know, you guys know, and I certainly know, you know, it's not all about him. You know, whoever his partner is up there, you know, they're a handful, and they're going to be a handful for our centre halves. And you know, they've not been quite at the required standard, you know, this season. You know, even the mighty Virgil van Dijk sort of, you know, slipped down to human levels this season. And so they're going to be in a game, and I think the key for Liverpool is obviously stopping the service into them as much as we can, so you know, making sure that we're dominating the ball, and but when we do lose it, you're closing down the spaces and the passes, because you know, once someone like Tony gets one-on-one, then it's tough for any defender, really. So starving those monsters up front for service, I think, is the key for Liverpool.
And just talk about Liverpool. I mean, who's gonna turn it for you? Who's gonna do the business? Who's exciting you? I mean, there's the obvious ones, but there might be somebody out there who's thinking, oh, really? Who's come through the ranks? You're thinking, actually, he's the next best thing, or somebody who's just been willfully just doing his job all the way through the season.
Yeah, it's a good question, mate. I think, you know, a couple to look out for. Curtis Jones has had a really nice run in the side now. He's a player who's come through our academy. He's not necessarily young now. I think he's just turned 22, but he's had really tough injuries over the last couple of years, so we haven't seen him as much as we like. But he started the last five games for Liverpool. Liverpool have won all five of those, and you know, it finally feels like he's becoming a first team regular now in part. So although he's not necessarily the most eye-catching player in terms of, you know, I mean, he might score a goal. He did score a goal, you know, in a recent game. I think it was the opener. But against Tottenham it was, but you know, won't necessarily be expecting him to be sort of on the score sheet, but he is one who your listeners maybe won't know as well, that is likely to start on Sunday and has looked really good for us. But in terms of up top, having Luis Diaz back for us is absolutely huge. You know, he's been a brilliant player ever since we brought him in. He only signed just over a year ago. It's crazy to think now. He feels like he's been here a lot longer. But he came in of the January of the season before, but hit the ground running, and running is the word. He's lightning quick. He's dangerous. He can go both sides. He loves to cut in, though, and hit the ball with his right foot. He's got a vicious shot, and having him back's huge. And so he's maybe one that, you know, the people haven't seen as much of this season, because he picked up a really bad injury in October, I think, that it took ages for him to come back, and he was having setbacks and things like that. But listen, you don't need to tell me, you don't need me to tell you guys about Mo Salah and people like that. You know, he's obviously a lot more known, but getting Luis Diaz back, and hopefully he's starting the game, and he could cause you guys a lot of problems if you're not careful.
So I'm going to ask you the question, how's the game going to pan out, and what do you think the score is going to be? And I know you hate giving scores.
It's the easiest way to sort of to make a fool of yourself, a score prediction. But listen, I'm fine with making a fool of myself, so I'll have a go. I there's a good determination about Liverpool at the moment. Like I've mentioned a couple of times, it's five wins in a row. That's not been necessarily been scintillating football the whole time, and a few games we've got over the line with late goals, like against Spurs, you know, very late, having thrown that 3-0 lead away, or other times it's just a penalty like against Fulham. But, you know, we are finding a way at the moment, and I fancy us to find a way. So I don't think Liverpool will have it all their own way. I think Brentford will have periods in the side where they're on top and will cause us problems. And I fancy Brentford to get a goal. But I just think there is a bit of a steely determination with Liverpool to the return of that attitude that got us, you know, so far, as far as it did. So I'm going for a 2-1 Liverpool win. I think it'll be a tough game, but I think we'll get the 3 points.
Okay, and I'm going to give my prediction when I'm with Laney in a little bit. You'll hear exactly what I've got to say, but it's probably no surprises for the Brentford fans out there to say what it is, because I've been going with the same score every single week and I've got it wrong every week so far. But anyway, listen, John, it's been great chatting to you. I'm going to catch up with you the weekend. I'm packing my Eurovision kit, mate. I've got my full Eurovision kit. In fact, I'll tell you something. I used to look after an artist, actually, a Russian artist who actually was in Eurovision, Sergei Lazarev, his name is, as well. I used to look after him. He's actually, I was doing some stuff with him a few years ago. I actually took him to Notting Hill Carnival once as well, which actually blew his mind. He was a bit of a character, that's all I can say. So, yeah, I've got my little fingers licked into, squeezed into Eurovision. So I'm going to be down there with my Eurovision kit, and we can go down there and have a Eurovision beer before the match, and maybe even have one after the match, because I'm going to be there till Monday as well, because I'm actually going for it this weekend. So I look forward to seeing you, mate.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you too. Thanks for having me on.
There you go, John from the Anfield Wrap, and he's not giving up hope, you know, of that European tour. I mean, they've got some sort of European tour, but he's looking for the big prize, you know what I'm saying, the Champions League. So, you know, he's not giving up any hope, but he still knows that there's work to be done this season and in the future. And it hasn't quite gone to plan, but no, he hasn't given up on anything with Liverpool. And you wouldn't expect him to, because he's been there 4 years. I mean, Liverpool, let's just see what they are about. They are, listen, they're a good side. Doesn't matter how the results have gone. Very good at creating chances, using through balls. Very good at counter-attacks. Good at attacking down the wings, coming back from losing positions, creating scoring chances, attacking set pieces, protecting the lead, and defending set pieces. Where they're weak, defending against attacks down the wings, defending against through balls, defending against skillful players, avoiding individual areas. They're very weak, avoiding offside, stopping opponents from creating chances, and defending counter attacks. They'd like to play possession football with short passes. They attempt through balls, often control the game in our half. They attack through the middle and down the right. They're not aggressive, and they play the offside trap. Counter attacks, Laney. This is where Thomas Frank is thinking.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, that's what any team that got a brain on their shoulders would do there. You know, you're gonna have to soak it up, and you're gonna have to hit them, and when you do hit them, you're gonna have to make them count. So, you know, I noticed that, you know, Jurgen Klopp, he criticised Tottenham for being a counter-attacking team. He said, you know, he expected more from them, he expected them to sort of, you know, take the game and impose a style of play a little bit more. But Brentford aren't in that position. So, you know, it's you know, we can't be expected to, you know, be you know, top four team quite yet where you actually can sort of, you know, dictate play. So, yeah, that's exactly what I'm expecting, to be honest with you, Bill. I just hope it's not all one-way traffic. We've got enough, you know, Sharda and Josh De Silva and Brian and Bumo. And we've got players that are going to be, you know, able to sort of get out wide and run at Liverpool. You know, I think they have frailties at the back. Tottenham showed that on Sunday. You can hurt them. Ivan Toney, I'm expecting him to not be marked out the game, but, you know, he needs to sort of raise it slightly. He hasn't necessarily sort of been at his the most powerful at best the last few weeks, but he's still, you know, he's still dangerous and he's still got goals in him. So I think we've got enough skill and speed buzzing around Toney to cause problems still. And we expect, you know, players like Yanel and Jensen to sort of, you know, to get into the area and to get some shots in as well. So we've got the ammo, Mel. We just need to go there and do ourselves justice, as I said.
So interestingly, in this game against Forest, I mean, against Chelsea and Bumo, he was left on the bench and he's brought off the bench and he came in and did some wonders. And then him and Sharda were back in against Forest. Do you think that was a tactic? Do you think it's a tactic to just kind of save the players' legs? Do you think it was a tactic because of the opposition we were playing? And how do you think he might react against Liverpool?
It gives us the options we need. You know, it can do one of like two or three things. He can play Mbeumo and Toney, which is, you know, which has been our strongest attacking combination, or not. You know, there's Sharda there. I thought Sharda had a bit of a disappointing, bit of a frustrating afternoon. I think maybe Sharda sort of summed up our frustrations, where, you know, he didn't, apart from a couple of turns and a couple of moments, you know, I thought Forest were going to be the opponents that he could really shine against. Maybe he'll have to do that up at Anfield. But, you know, going back to what I'm expecting from Thomas Frank, he can keep his cards a little bit close to his chest. I think the two games, the Forest match and then the Chelsea game, and the performance against Villa as well, it showed you we can mix it and create chances against the very best quality teams in this division. You know, and you have to include Chelsea in that. And I know it's, you know, they're shocking form, you know, and there's, you know, there's a mathematical chance they'll go down. Of course they won't, but, you know, you have to look at the team, and there is incredible talent there, and we went there and did a job on them. So yeah, I'm confident that if a couple of things, you know, combine, you know, we do need Liverpool not to be at their best, but, you know, that if that happens, then, you know, I'm confident we can get something out of it.
So Lainey, I mean, listen, we're going to Liverpool on Saturday. It's going to be a long weekend. It's going to be a fun weekend. Is the fun going to continue in the 90 minutes of that match? I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I'm going to go for it this year, Bill. I'm going to say it's going to be another really positive afternoon. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
And I'm going to go, as you know, what I'm going to go for. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win for the Mighty Bees, only because it came in and I actually didn't do a podcast when we actually got a 2-0 victory. And every single podcast we've done since, there's been no 2-0. So I'm going to go for the 2-0 Brentford victory against Liverpool on Saturday. So listen, you and me, we're going to go up early on Saturday morning. Like I said to you, we're looking forward to meeting the characters for a few beers at lunchtime. We've got drinking quite near to the ground before the game. Actually, there's a big bar with a big garden, you know, big beer garden with lots of bees, and Liverpool fans go as well. It's going to be good, isn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, mate. It's going to be a good 48 hour Knees up, that's what I say.
That's right. And talking to John as well, as he said to you, it's all Eurovision, so get your Eurovision underpants, get your Eurovision,
no,
you know, swimsuits all sorted, like, you know what I'm saying? Just get ready for that, because they've gone full Eurovision zone. And I've got a little party in Liverpool on Sunday night as well. My mate's got a party as well, so it's full on party zone for me and Lainey this weekend. We're looking forward to it. Anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all good channels, and also write us a review. Thank you for the beers, everyone that's bought us some beers out there. Besotted.com/beer. Don't forget Besotted Global as well. Besotted.com/global is a little global community. We will be doing our USA tour kind of chat thing probably next week, because we've got West Ham and they're on a Sunday, West Ham. So we'll have an extra day. And so we might have a few bit more time to chat about stuff. So we could talk about that for the people who want to know about what's happening in America. But other than that, nice chat to you, Lainey. We got Lainey in the house.
Afternoon, Bill.
Oh, good afternoon to you too as well. Everybody, enjoy yourselves. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Don't forget to check out the post-match podcast, prideofwest.london. But we're going up to Liverpool, looking forward to Eurovision. As we say, come on, UBs. UBs.
UBs.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.